Welcome to the PS5 Central podcast, where we give you all the news, the reviews, and the
remakes,
and all the latest games upcoming for the PlayStation 5. I'm joined here by the lovely Jordan. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It's a lovely Saturday morning where we are. It's actually a nice Saturday morning. We have some reprieve from the wet weather that we've had the past 2 days here in Victoria. Feeling good. Feeling happy. How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I agree with Jordan. If anyone has ever been to or knows about Melbourne, the city in Australia, it is notorious for its temperamental weather, and that is an understatement. By the time you put on a coat because it's raining, you'll go out and it's sunny and you've got to take it all off. But hopefully everyone here is keeping safe. You know, there's a lot of flooding going on, particularly in the rural areas. So, hope everyone's staying safe. So we're just going to be talking a bit about the news recap this week, as well as the games we've been playing. I'm pretty excited. I haven't really played much of the PS5 ever since Elden Ring. Funny story, right? So with Elden Ring, I really tried to defeat the boss, right? Like, so I defeated Melania and I'm like, okay, I thought this is going to be smooth sailing. Got to the bloody final guy and he was all right, but it was that beast, the final form, right?
Who's the final guy?
The Elden Beast. Oh, the final is Ragadon. I think it's Ragadon, right?
Okay. I don't think I've done that. Don't stress about spoilers, but I don't know if I have. Is that the last thing?
That's like the final story boss, the Elden Beast.
Maybe I have. Can I be honest? It's been a while since I played Elden Ring, and I feel like I might have blocked some of it out of my memory, if I'm honest.
Well, I was very keen on trying it, and then for the first ever time, I decided to get some help with the co-op because I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It's just hard. Like the first Ragadon, I can do pretty easy, or not pretty easy, but I can defeat him.
You're comfortable and then, with it.
Yeah. Yeah, but then it's that Elden Beast that gets me. And then I'm like, okay. Look, I could spend days and days on this and, you know, my gaming time is very limited, or I can move on to Overwatch because I kind of want to. And, you know, I don't really derive pride from the, you know, I defeated Elden Ring or finished it. But I do want to go back because I kind of still want to complete it and know the story. Although I wasn't that invested. I think everyone sort of knew that because I kind of remember half the boss names. I wasn't really invested in the Elden Ring story. I know it's phenomenal. It's still my game of the year so far. Which I really can't wait to do a game of the year because it's like sort of the end of the year.
It's getting close. We're getting the time of the year. And this is like the calm before the storm.
Yeah, it is.
Like you and I, Gandalf and Pippin, looking out from Tirith. Just this is the quiet before the hammer stroke falls.
It is.
Goodness me. I think from next weekend, or it might be the middle of this week, when A Plague Tale Requiem drops, from there on, it is.
It's all contenders.
Banger after banger.
Yeah, they're all contenders coming out. So it's going to be big. Well, we'll see how we go. And yeah, I was just saying, like, if I move to Overwatch, I thought in my head, I'm not going to go back to Elden Ring. Like, it's going to be Overwatch, then it's going to be Call of Duty, it's going to be God of War. I'm like, I just know, as much as I'm like, I want to set this aside, but I had to make a choice. You know, I can't just stay on Elden Ring forever. And I've put over 100 hours into that game. So I'm happy and satisfied with the fact that I've played it. I think I could give a very, very, very in-depth opinion over it. I don't think the game defeated me. I don't think the game was too hard. I'd never put it down for that. But I was very happy with the experience. I just think I have to move on. That's a consequence of taking so long with it. Yeah. Anyway, let's go to the news. We can talk about what we played later.
Yeah, we've got a very special portion at the end because it's been a while since we chatted about what we played. So
exactly.
Hang around to the end and we'll talk about what we've played in the past month or so. But yeah, let's start off with our top story.
Top
story of the day is, there may be no new Call of Duty in 2023.
Yes, that is a big one. And I think a necessary one. I've wanted this for years. I actually think they should have done this for Call of Duty 2019. They probably didn't read the tea leaves back then and see how damn successful that game was going to be. Because, not that I'm some COD YouTuber or who knows all that, but I would say, obviously, Cold War was, I think, a bit of a dip in quality. And then what was the one after Cold War? Vanguard.
Vanguard.
And that was obviously a dip too. Like 2019, people were still playing it. It was still the premium. That was where Warzone came out. I honestly thought they could have supported that for years. Even the multiplayer, that gunfight, that was a lot of fun. People loved the multiplayer. And I think they realized that. And Modern Warfare 2, which is touted, like we knew from a mile away that was going to be phenomenal. And might I say the campaign was great in 2019. And like, I know Warzone, I'm probably most excited for Warzone, I will say, but the campaign for me, man, like Modern Warfare has always had a special heart, special place in my heart for the campaign. And I am so excited. And it actually genuinely excites me over this news. So there's a lot to do with Call of Duty, right? And we'll talk about the first thing. So basically they're saying, look, in 2023, so this is Jason Schreier tweeted this, there's going to be no new Call of Duty until I think 2024. But what they will be doing is expansion, particularly campaigns. So Push Square reported on this as well. So they basically said that it's reported that a Modern Warfare 2 campaign DLC is coming in 2023, as well as a Greatest Hits multiplayer map pack. And I'm like, in terms of like supporting a game, those are probably some of the two of the top things you would want, right? Like, especially in a COD, like the best maps are legacy maps, because I think maps have been a big problem. A silent problem, but a big problem in Call of Duty for the last 10 years. You know, where have there been the cream of the crop maps since Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops days, right? There hasn't really, like some have hit recently, but the quality hasn't been there. So definitely bringing those maps, I think would be good. And the campaign DLC, I think that's just more for guys like me who absolutely adored the 2019 campaign. I thought the writing was great. I thought the story was great. The AAA quality of it was phenomenal. So I love this. So they're basically saying there won't be a mainline Call of Duty in 2024. In 2023. We're going to continue to support, Call of Duty in the second year. So they'll also say that there will be some, there will be basically a Greatest Hits map pack. So this will be the classics from Infinity Ward, Treyarch, and Sledgehammer. So it's meant to be released for year two. And now, obviously, being Modern Warfare 2, I really hope we get a lot of those maps, because I can't think of a better group of maps than Modern Warfare 2. Like, that was a cream of the crop. I mean, you could say Black Ops, but like, man, Modern Warfare 2. Something about like Modern Warfare 2 was phenomenal. And I just think this is a smart move. Like, if you think about the way they've done it, it's great. The whole yearly thing is great, but it sort of gives no room to breathe for a game that is successful. If there's one that is wildly successful, there is no room to breathe, because they've already started making the next one. It's like, no matter how good you are, you only have one year to live. And then we're cutting you off and we're going to the next thing. So yeah, even if you're wildly successful, which I think 2019 was, and that's why I think it's a good idea in this day and age where live service over the next 5 years type games are the big money makers, are where everyone's pushing. I think it's a good idea to at least extend the life, give it a bit of breathing space, and also support it with long form content like campaign and maps DLC, because you look at other games where the support's been pretty subpar. And even I can be the first one to say that Warzone, when it first came out, was not supported at all. It was really badly supported. So I like this idea of bringing all this content and supporting it, because it does bring the stakes up. Like, you have to make sure that MW2 is going to be good, because otherwise people drop off. But I think it will be. And I honestly think this is the safe bet. So it's a great move.
To keep in mind as well is that next year's COD was supposed to be a Sledgehammer Games production, which if you look back in the past, the Sledgehammer Games productions have been the least critically well received. Mm-hmm. I don't know this for a fact, because I think the sales for the COD is usually pretty good. But I think if you compared the sales of a Sledgehammer game to a Modern Warfare or a Black Ops, they would still be extremely good, because it's still Call of Duty, but not as good as a Modern Warfare or a Black Ops. The thing with the annualization as well of COD is that it used to run on such a cycle where, because it was all about the multiplayer. It was just multiplayer. Yes, there was campaign. Like, obviously, campaign came with Call of Duty, but it was about the multiplayer. And that was the cycle. The multiplayer would come out. In January, we would get word of a map pack. In February, the map pack would come out. And then for the next 2 months, we would get map packs. And then it would get to like September, the game would be dead. Multiplayer for a Call of Duty game would be absolutely non-existent. And then we'd be ramping up to the next COD. And because the cycle was, teenagers like we were at the time, and as the esports thing started to happen, it was like, yep, play, and then be completely burnt out on everything about that game, where we're feeding into the hype cycle of the next one, because then the betas would start to come out and then we'd be looking towards the next COD and then rinse and repeat. Phil Spencer had already come out and said, I believe, that they were already going to be moving away from annualization from COD, and it's obviously needed. Look at Assassin's Creed. Remember when Ubisoft was like, we're annualizing Assassin's Creed, and people were like, when are you going to stop? And they were like, when you stop buying them. And then people stopped buying them. They stopped. They went, hey, what do we need to do to reinvigorate this franchise? And they did that. They did Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla. And then they've stopped again. They've gone, okay, Valhalla didn't hit quite as well as we wanted to. Didn't hit quite as well as Odyssey. I think that would be the consensus. So we're going to stop. We're going to reinvent. We're going to reinnovate, move forward from there. Mm. Obviously, with Warzone thrown in now, it's a bit of a different kettle of fish for Call of Duty, because that is their live service model.
Yeah.
In terms of the campaign content, though, do you know what I really want? I want like a War Stories DLC, and it is like, let's go and see Soap before he was here. Let's go and see Ghost before he was here. Let's go and see a mission, like something with Captain Price before he went to Pripyat. And maybe the mission ends and they're like, so what do we do now? And it's like, ever been to Ukraine? And it's like, and they're off to go do that. I reckon that is the safest way to do it. If you do character driven on the characters that we love from Modern Warfare, you do character driven DLC, it'll drive hype. It's going to drive sales. I reckon that's what they should do.
You're a bloody ideas man, Jordan, because that is a phenomenal idea. And I love that, because I would say the Modern Warfare story, funnily enough, the strength is in its characters. You might think like this action die-hardy type movie where, you know, the stakes are high. It sort of reminds you a bit of Michael Bay. Look, you might think it's the action-packed set pieces, and they're certainly fun, but people have such an attachment to Ghost and Soap and Price. And, you know, like you said, that mission in Pripyat all gillied up. Like, that was a flashback, wasn't it? That was, like, a mission with Price. And I think that was a legendary – I mean, part of it was obviously the gameplay. But I would say that was one of the most memorable missions in Call of Duty history. And I think you're right, Joel. It's like, you know, so we know so little about Ghost. We wanted to learn more about Soap. And even Farrah, man, that mission with Farrah as a child, which is pretty confronting. Man.
Such a good mission.
Yeah, so good. You love her. Like, you understand where she's come from and, like, you know, the way she's grown up. And yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And I just hope the maps, like, I hope they don't skimp out. I just hope they really go all in and bring back the favorites, Terminal, Rust, whatever. Yeah. Because
the problem we'll find, though, and this has happened before when they've brought back maps, is they never play as well as you remember, because the game is different. People play different. They've brought back, like, so many of the maps that we want back have been brought back before. Like, Terminal was in MW3. Firing Range was my favorite map from Black Ops, and that came back during Black Ops 2 or 3. And... It was two or three, and it's never the same. It's never, ever, ever the same.
The only one that probably
is the same every time is Nuketown.
Nuketown.
That's the one that's the same every time, no matter what, because there's only so many ways that you can play that. There's always someone head-glitching the Jeep. There's always someone like wall-glitching up the top in each house. There's always someone that's like camping in the moving truck in the middle. Like, that always stays the same. I don't know.
Very wise input, Jordan. Like, I think that's very well said, because you're right. Obviously, the way people play COD is so different now. It's so funny. You're right. Nuketown has had like 70 variants, 2023, 24. But it does go to show how legendary that map was, because that map was still, like, I would say purely anecdotally, I don't have any evidence to say this, but just off what I was going off, what probably the most popular map in every COD that had Nuketown, even including the ones where there was wall jumping, wall running, and movement. Like, that map was so versatile for all of that. It goes to show how legendary that map is. Yeah. It had a zombies mode for a bit as well.
Zombies, I've got such nostalgia for that map. I don't even really like that map that much, but I have such nostalgia for it, because I'll never forget in 2010, it must have been. I think that's when Black Ops came out. 2010, we were at school. Like we obviously all went to high school together. We're at school. I remember seeing Dan at lunchtime. He's like, dude, IGN just dropped 40 minutes of Black Ops multiplayer gameplay. And everyone was like, and this is Nuketown. This is this map, Nuketown. And it's set up like this. He's like, oh my gosh. And it's like, oh, like from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought. Oh, what a shocker of a movie that was.
Okay. Guilty confession. I don't think it's that bad.
Oh, I hated it. And like I was a kid back then. Like, and I thought, you know, as a kid, you just love everything you go to.
Their treasure was knowledge.
But when Harrison Ford got into a fridge and survived a nuclear explosion in the fridge, I was that part I didn't mind. Like everything until it became very alien. And I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't like that at all. Because it was obviously like
when Kate Blanchett's sitting there going, I want to know everything. I want to know. And then her head blows up. You didn't like that? Or when the old dude, who looks like Danny DeVito, but taller, and he, the English dude, and he's like, all I remember is Harrison Ford going, what are you, like a triple agent or something? No, I just lied to you last time.
Oh, man. That is, yeah.
Why haven't we seen Indiana Jones in COD? We've seen Predator. We've seen Michael Myers. Why isn't Indiana Jones being in COD? Why do you hate us?
Well, there's an Indiana Jones game coming out. You know, obviously Xbox or Microsoft are working on that. Or Bethesda, right? Is it Bethesda?
Yeah, Bethesda. Oh, yeah. It's from a Bethesda studio, yeah.
Yeah, because I know they're obviously doing Avatar. And then, they're not doing Avatar. Sorry, they're not doing Avatar.
No, Ubisoft's doing Avatar.
Ubisoft, yeah. Is it Ubisoft that are doing the Indiana Jones game?
No, I think it's Bethesda. Oh, okay. I don't know. We'll have to double check that. I'm pretty sure it's a Bethesda studio.
Yeah, okay. The new Indiana Jones game in development and Machine Games. Oh, it's Wolfenstein guys.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Well,
that's a big plus for them. You know what else is also a big plus? All the new PS Plus Extra and Premium games for October.
Segue. I like it.
So we're reading from Push Square here. These are all the games that have been announced for PS Plus Extra for this month. So these are your games that are going to be added to your library that you can download and play until they leave the service. So this is the extra one. So just for a reminder for PlayStation Plus, it now goes Essential at the bottom, Extra, and then Premium. And Premium is the one where you're getting all of those remasters and the backwards compatibility for some PS3, PS2, PS1 titles. Actually, it's not PS3 titles. Or some PS3 titles it is. I think you have to stream them. Anyways, it's a whole thing. Don't worry about it. Marketing is as bungled as I just made it. For PS Plus Extra, the games you can look forward to playing are Assassin's Creed Chronicles China, India and Russia, AC3 Remastered, AC Syndicate, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. We've then got Dragon Quest Builders 1 and 2, Dragon Quest Heroes, The World Tree's Woe, and The Blight Below, which is a fantastic title. Dragon Quest Heroes 2, Dragon Quest 11S, Echoes of an Elusive Age, GTA Vice City, the Definitive Edition for PS4 and 5, Hohokam, Inside, Naruto, Jiboruto, Shinobi Striker, and The Medium. I'm fairly certain Limbo is also on that list. If I read from the PS Plus Premium list, we've also got Castlevania Lords of Shadow for the PS3, Everyday Shooter for the PS3, Limbo for the PS4, Ultra Street Fighter 4 for the PS4, and then Yakuza 3, 4, 5 Remastered. So that will be available from Tuesday, the 18th of October. And the special note should be noted that AC Chronicles India, Russia, and Syndicate will only be playable on PS4, not PS5.
Yeah, there must be some backwards compatibility thing with that. But look, I mean, the Medium I always get curious about that game because obviously it was touted to be a big part of Microsoft's strategy. This is going to be one of the big ones, like the Halos, but obviously it didn't really hit. The Forzas, but yeah, anyway, it looks like a good list. Interesting to see GTA, you know, on there. They must
only one of them, one only one of them, trilogy.
Yeah. And from memory, I think GTA 3 was and San Andreas were pretty hit bad by the way, you know, GTA. What I'll say is, I'll switch it around to make it easier. GTA Vice City was the best, from what I know, quality wise,
remasters,
yeah, as in least affected by glitches and all the bugs and stuff, from what I know. Vice City is my favorite GTA still. Like, the nostalgia, the hours I spent in that game just doing random stuff. Ah, what a game. I really would love the GTA 5 treatment for GTA Vice City, or the GTA 6 treatment, let's say, for Vice City. I know that that's not Rockstar's mantra, but look, it's yeah, seems like a pretty good list. By the way, we still don't have word on what the monthly games are for next month. Obviously, this is just for the extras and premium tier. This is not the free download games. What's that? Sorry,
I look forward to seeing those downloadable games for next month leak. That'll probably happen in the next, like, I reckon by the time we record next, it will have leaked.
Yeah, no, it's never like announced. It's just leaked every time. So it's quite funny. All right. Oh, actually, I will link this to the other story. And I thought this was just really interesting insight into how the Xbox Games Pass, Games as a Service, and the Sony, you know, PS Plus free games. I just thought it was really good, interesting insight. So, look, you know, we know that all this SEC, these regulatory bodies, are having that battle between Microsoft and Sony, and a lot of regulators are coming in saying, you know, this is a story a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, every week there's a bit of news coming out about it, about Sony said this, Microsoft said this, just about the Activision purchase. And, you know, it's still, obviously, it's been announced. This is their intention, but, you know, it still has to be subject to approval from a lot of these regulatory bodies.
Yeah.
And there's investigations going on into how fair is this. So it's always juicy for us, because when things like this happen, and then, you know, filings and reports and documents that were normally hidden will come to light, you know, due to the nature of these investigations by these regulatory bodies. And then we get to see a bit of a peek behind the curtain for a lot of these things, which is really cool. So this, I thought, we'll link it with this story about the PS Plus, because it just gives a bit of an insight about how much Sony and Microsoft pay for some of these games to be free. So Sony paid $3.5 million to secure Ark Survival Evolved as a PlayStation Plus title. This was in March 2022. So we normally never really know how much, you know, these companies pay, like Sony, for games,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, so to get a game on their subscription service, that amount is never disclosed, really.
Yeah, because if you think about it, like, you know, to put a game for free on PlayStation Plus, you know, it had obviously Sony approaching and saying, hey, we'll pay you a lump sum to put this on for free. And, you know, you kind of hope that the lump sum you get is more than the amount you would get from the sales. You know,
just quick divergent. Do you remember when the dude from
Oddworld.
Oh, can't believe we shouldn't have taken the deal. We should have done the sales. And it's like, mate, did you really think 400 million sale or whatever, there wasn't 400 million, but did you really think you're going to make that much money off the game? People had to actually put their money towards it or something they got for free as a subscription service. Like, give it a rest, bro.
And 100%, it's very hard to look at that in hindsight, because it is like, you know, I think of like Rocket League or Fall Guys, and it's like, yeah, those games are insanely successful. And had people known now what that game would have been, you could have charged $40, $60 and people would have bought it.
I still don't think it would have taken off as much.
Taken off, because back then no one knew about it. And no one would have just seen, you know, rocket powered battle cars and been like, okay, this is something I want. So it is, you know, it is interesting how these lump sum works. And so basically they paid $3.5 million to secure it. So this was from the SEC filing.
It was a bag and a half, that.
Yeah, it is a bag and a half. So it was really interesting, because obviously Microsoft have a deal with this, and you know, because Ark I don't think it's exclusive, correct me if I'm wrong, but it probably isn't. So let me see. So this deal, I would say, it was in 2021 they entered an agreement with Sony to make Ark Survival available for PS4 for March 2022. So you can obviously a couple of months ahead for $3.5 million. So at this time, the company already had a 3-year licensing agreement with Microsoft for Games Pass, which is scheduled to end in 2021. So that's obviously where Sony would come in and say, hey, we want it on our system for March 2021. But then in 2020, it was confirmed Microsoft had signed the game's Ark 2, the sequel. That's obviously Vin Diesel if you remember that. And basically, yeah.
My family.
So basically they said, you know, this is amended, and there was $2.5 million in revenue related to Arc One perpetual license for 6 months. So from June, ended in June 30, 2022. So they basically made $2.5 million in licensing fees, and then $2.3 million of that, they deferred that to Arc Two. So it's a lot of deferred revenue, but it's really interesting to see how these, you know, $2.5 million just to put a game for free, like a free game for the month, $2.5 million. And we saw also there was a regulatory filing earlier. Polish developer Big Cheese Studio revealed it was paid $600,000 by Microsoft to bring Cooking Game Simulator to Xbox Games Pass. Now that's different because that's not just free for the month. That's actually permanently free on Games Pass, I'm assuming. So that's interesting. And Ark is, you know, obviously a very popular game, and $2.5 million for 1 month, you know, Sony would have put that essentially because, oh yeah, it would have been free for the, for essentially the 2022 PlayStation Plus games for March. So that is big. That is really big. And I just wanted to bring that in just to show, you know, give a bit of insight into how these deals are made and basically how, you know, the money that goes behind some of these monthly games. Like, it's no small feat. And some of these, obviously the little ones like Rocket League back at the time when they didn't have much say, you know, it might have been only a couple hundred thousand. Like, we'd never know. I honestly wouldn't be surprised.
I think the amount for Rocket League has been disclosed. So I don't, okay. Yeah, I, because the dude who, I think it's Jeremy Dunham, who yep. was the president of Psyonix, I think in an interview he has said what the fee was. I feel like, it, like looking at it, it seems quite inconsequential compared to how much money they could have made, but the game's free to play now anyway.
Yeah,
and look, that, but I think it was something like, it was not much money for what they made, what they paid to make it go free. Or to make it downloadable for that month. For some reason, I don't know. I'll have to do some fact checking and do some digging, but I'm pretty sure he let slip. I don't know if he let it slip or if he just flat out said one day, like, yeah, this is how much they paid us for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of these games, they'd probably be in the hundreds of thousands, you know, to put them for free. But it is that exposure that you get, you know, as a result. But yeah, look, it was really interesting, and I thought that was great insight. But moving on, I wanted to talk. We'll stay on PlayStation games and sort of behind the curtains, because we've got reports, and Push Square reported on this, that PlayStation Studio Malaysia is working on a top secret PS5 game. So this will be, they did move to a new office space in KL, Kuala Lumpur. And they're working on some projects. So they've got 77 employees currently, and they've assisted in stuff. So they assisted in MLB, Last of Us Part 1, but it was very small contributions. Obviously, Malaysia, you know, I would think like Malaysia would be somewhat of a growing development space, you know, development
country. Yeah, growing, definitely a growth market.
Yeah, a growing market in the dev space, in the IT dev space sort of thing. So this obviously makes sense that it's a small you know, small contributions, but it's interesting. They're trying to get the diversify the pool of talent, you know, location is big, you know, to where you're getting your talent from. I'd love to see Sony open some sort of Australian studio, because sign me up.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Remember Rockstar had, Bondi. Rockstar Bondi.
Yeah. They obviously made that. LA Noir.
Yeah. LA Noir. Yeah. LA Noir is a good game.
I know. I just didn't know why nothing ever followed up from that. Like, yeah, it seemed like so amazing. Good. Yeah. Anyway. Well, essentially, they're doing a lot of assisted. They did a lot of assisted, but now they've got a fully fledged art team. So they can start doing environmental modeling, concept art, animation, and things like that. But they're basically working on something they can't talk about right now. So what that means is it's some sort of, I don't think it'd be something AAA, but it is something that's really, you know, really good to think about. And I like that there is this diversified pool of talent. I like that there's a lot of different projects going on that we don't know about, and we'll just have to wait and see really, because yeah, there's no real information other than the fact that they are working on some sort of secret project for PS5.
All right, look, just speaking of things that are being worked on for the PS5, something that's been picking up steam probably in the last month or so is all the Death Stranding 2 stuff. So I believe we reported a while ago, well, we didn't report, but we spoke a while ago about the whole Al Fanning debacle with Hideo Kojima. And so he posted, there was something about a movie called I Am Sam, and he posted something about Sam, and Sam was obviously the main character of Death Stranding 1, Sam Porter Bridges, and also the name of a character or the name of a movie that Al Fanning was an actress in. Since then, Hideo has like just tweeted out a photo of Al Fanning, and it said, "Who am I?" Over the front of it. And then he tweeted out another picture that said, "Where am I?" with the caption of, "Who is where?" So like Hideo being Hideo pretty much.
yes.
Since then, it's sort of been confirmed that Al Fanning is going to be in Hideo Kojima's next project, and it looks like it is Death Stranding 2, which is pretty cool. On that, it looks like this really is all ramping up. So two of the top executives from PlayStation's marketing department, the names are Craig Malanka and Eric Lempel. On Hideo's Twitter, he again just took photos with them. He used a photo with each of them visiting his studio in Japan, I'm pretty sure. So you wouldn't think that these top-level executives would just be paying a visit to Hideo just to see, you know, have a chin wag and see how he's doing. You would assume that this is to iron out some finer details for whatever the next project is going to be. We are getting towards Game Awards season. That's probably only a month and a half away, if that. I would be willing to put my house on the fact that we will see Hideo there in some form, whether that is to announce Death Stranding 2, just to fuel the hype cycle for Death Stranding 2. There will be something related to that at the Game Awards because he already has that existing relationship with Jeff Keighley. Jeff Keighley was obviously in Death Stranding 2. They have that whole thing that we're going back to. Jeff Keighley was in Death Stranding 1. As like one of the people at the things you can deliver to. And famously, Hideo showed off Metal Gear 5 at Game Awards. Is that correct? In the past? They made a stand about, you know, obviously all the bad stuff that apparently went down with Konami and Kojima. But yeah, this is really exciting for someone like me who adored Death Stranding for what it was. Got that it was a super weird game, and like it is a weird concept for a game where you're literally just delivering stuff. But it's not just that, it's all the stuff that goes into it. It's the design of how you are doing that. It's the moments that you have in your mind that you do not forget. Like, I'll never forget doing my first major delivery and going up this hill and coming down. It's this massive, like, green vista, and then this music starts playing. I think it's Why So Serious or Don't Be So Serious by Churches. And it's like, oh man, oh, this is hitting. This is really hitting. And to spend as much time in that game as I did, doing what you are doing, just speaks to how engaging the narrative was. Confusing at times, but how engaging the narrative was and how engaging the characters are.
Yeah, I'm no stranger to confusing narrative with MGS. But I can hear you and Dan just hassling me. I get PTSD and trauma, but I will play Death Stranding. I will, I promise. But do you know what the funniest thing is, Shorts? Death Stranding, the song by Bring Me the Horizon, Ludens, that's like probably one of my most played songs on my June playlist right now. It's so funny. I love that song so much. Just like, I can't wait to play this game. And I think I will. I have to do it over the holidays. Over the, you know, 3 week Christmas break I have from work, which is nice. But you know, maybe I'll be too busy playing COD, Overwatch, bloody God of War. I don't know how, you know, like God of War. Can't wait. Do you know what else, Jorts, is actually one of my most played songs? It's actually quite funny of this segue, because it is also one of my favorite songs on my gym playlist, is Jaden Smith's song I'm Ready, which is the theme song for Miles Morales.
Hey.
Speaking of Miles Morales, that is coming to PC in November. It's been confirmed. So Push Square reported on this, or reading from Push Square, I should say. So they're coming to PC via the Steam and Epic Game Stores on 18th of November, 2022. It's a new trailer that's out. Talks about, you know, NVIDIA and, you know, a lot of the different technologies that are going to come with that. So look, it makes sense. Obviously, Spider-Man came to PC, you know, recently, and, you know, it just makes sense that there's a follow-up with Miles Morales. But I think I love this. I actually really think it's a good idea. It'd be great to see the sales, the extra money Insomniac get, put that into more into Spider-Man 2. It's clear that Sony are not backing down from this tactic of bringing things to PC. And yeah, I think it's pretty sound. You know, it's obviously been well, it's been a long time. You know, Miles Morales is a launch game for the PS5, was it not? So I think they've extracted everything they possibly can from the PlayStation 5 audience. I don't see any more PlayStation 5 people wanting to get Miles Morales. So yeah, it makes sense. And yeah, just thought I'd mention that. So if anyone wants to see Kingpin or freaking Shrek, you know, Shrek. I think there's a mod for Shrek swinging around. So yeah, the mods are going to be quite funny. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting too. And I guess the last bit of news, or do you want to do the breeze over now? And then we'll talk about what we've been playing.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do a quick breeze over stuff. So for FIFA 23, FIFA 23 has had an abnormal amount of people play yeah, the most recent incarnation. I think that's the only way it could be said.
Yeah. 10 million players in the first week alone. So this is from Push Square as well. So 10.3. So FIFA 22 comparably did 9 million players in its first 10 days. And I'm pretty sure that game was pretty much panned a bit because of how little it improved or changed things. So, I mean, it just goes to show that FIFA is just not going down. Funnily enough, this could be the last FIFA, George, until we get EA Sports FC or something like that. Yeah. So it just goes to show that this game is not stopping. It is a snowball that is building and building and is still going just as strong. So that's really interesting. They are getting just making bank on these games. And it'll be interesting to see. To be honest, it will be interesting to see what will happen once it's EA Sports FC. What if there is a drop in numbers, if there's actually an increase. But yeah, just still killing it. You know, soccer, to say football is the world's game is like actually an understatement. It is insane how popular it is in every country in the world. And, you know, we'll yeah, it just goes to show that a brand like that, FIFA, just making bank. So
you could say the popularity for FIFA knows no bounds. You know what else knows no bounds? Need for Speed Unbound, which is a new speed game revealed by EA, which is actually coming this year. So it's a bit of a weird one, this one. It's got like a most wanted underground sort of vibe, but then it's mashed with like these. So it's like a normal looking driving game, normal looking Need for Speed game with like a bit of an anime aesthetic with like these anime like effects, which you can like tune to your car. So like when you're doing like, when you're drifting and that sort of stuff, you'll have like, instead of having realistic smoke, you'll have like bright, colorful anime like,
yeah,
it's kind of weird, but I kind of dig it. Like, I kind of like it. It's nice, like, stylistically to look at. Yeah, I don't know.
It's weird. Yeah, I don't know how to describe that art style because it's almost like
cel shaded.
Yeah, it's like that Scott Pilgrim type, you know, where it's like got that animated, it's like real life, but it's got that type of you know, drawings over it as well. But the cars are realistic. Like the cars look very realistic.
And the world is realistic. And the world is realistic too.
Yeah, there's good, you know, there's reflections and ray tracing and all that, but they've added this extra art style, which I like. I know they're trying to differentiate themselves, which is good. Now, Prestart reported, or I'm reading from Prestart, that you can actually turn that off. So if you don't like it, you can turn it off. They're just trying to go for this art style.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And they're clearly trying to go for something different here. They had ASAP Rocky on the trailer of their thing. So obviously the people look real and, you know, but they've got this extra layer of art style on top. So I think it's cool. I mean, I thought Need for Speed Heat was actually phenomenal. Maybe I'm in the minority there. I thought it was actually a really amazing
set. I thought it was good. I wouldn't say phenomenal. I thought it was good.
I actually thought it was really good. Like, I mean, the story I thought was one of the worst I've ever, it was disgusting. like not disgusting, it was just really bad. But I thought the way they implemented a lot of things was really, really great to see, with the whole heat system, the whole banking a rep and the multiply, the day-night cycle, how that actually played into things and the difference, you know, races are in the day, night is street racing, nights where you get your rep, days where you get cash, you have different cars for, and you know, you've got your drift build, you've got your drag build, you've got your race build. You know, I think they need to tweak that a bit more to make it more relevant, to make it more useful to actually own a bunch of cars rather than just, you know, because in the previous Need for Speeds, you know, you could own multiple cars. It's like, what's the point? You just have one car that's really good. But they, in Need for Speed Heat, they actually really got to tuning where you can drift or where you can, you know, brake and turn, and there's advantages, disadvantages, and you need different builds for different types of races.
And you could say it had RPG elements.
Ew, you could. And CarPG, mate. That is a term that the crew by Ubisoft coined when that first came out. CarPG. I think I was 30 to 40 hours into the crew one. So yeah, what a game. Anyway, it was not the best game. But I think they need to build off what Heat did. I love the fact that they did engine swaps is really good. It made you be able to drive your favorite street tuner cars, you know, with big engines, and keep them up to date. You don't need to sort of keep upgrading to a Ferrari or get bigger and faster cars like that. So I still remember to this day when, you know, and I think the most fun, the reason why I had so much fun is because Dan, myself, a couple of our other mates, we all jumped on together and we did races together. And it was so funny because I remember one time Krish, one of our mates, he like came with this Beetle, this VW buggy. And we're like, what are you doing? Like Dan had a Ferrari. I had a decked out Evo. I think Jerome had like a McLaren. And then like, he just floored us because he did like this engine swap. It was like a sleeper car and it just like had no.
He was hustling you.
Yeah, he was, because it had no customization. It was just this random VW buggy and it just flew. And me and Mitch and some of us were just pissing ourselves laughing. But it's, yeah, it's, I think it's good. They obviously, like, I'm just coming from a really, like, I'm a big fan of Need for Speed. So I'm obviously very, very biased. Well, when I say the Need for Speed Heat is phenomenal and all this, and I know that, but I do see that there's a lot of power to that franchise. They need to get that perfect mix of action street racing. I know everyone always says go back to underground, but I think what you said, Jordan, with COD, when, if you want to go back, I think you're going to see that it wasn't all as cracked up to be, because I think part of the magic of, like, going back to the old maps of COD is what I'm saying, George, but I think part of the magic of Underground was the fact that it was so tied so heavily to Fast and Furious and Too Fast, Too Furious, like that street car culture and stuff. And now, I don't know, that street car culture is there, but it's not, I can only speak from Australia. It's less about decked out body kits and things like that, and just more about engine and performance and, yeah, less flash and just more grunt. So I don't know. I mean, I hope they can get a good balance of all of it, but yeah, I'm excited for this, but we'll have to wait and see. I really hope there's a good story. Like, I still think, like, Most Wanted with some of their characters was so, it was so cheesy, but like Razor and Sergeant Cross and all that, it was so funny. Like, I hate that they haven't done anything with him. They keep teasing him or putting him in random cameos and it's so silly, but who knows?
You reckon Jake Fish will pop up in this?
Who? Oh, yeah. Aaron Paul?
He's popping up in every game except his.
Yeah.
And then last, we might save the Dead Space stuff until next week because we might want to talk about it a little bit more then. You reckon?
Yeah, we'll just say that
there's some Dead Space stuff that's dropped today as we're recording this. So some new gameplay, a new look at the Dead Space remake.
And it looks phenomenal.
In January. Looks so good.
Very good. This trailer may contain content inappropriate for children. That is what the description says. You don't say. But yeah, excited for that. And how I want to see more Callisto. I want to see if Callisto actually respond to this and bring out some stuff, but we'll see. Yeah, and then the final thing.
I've been getting YouTube trailers for Callisto.
They're starting to target.
Got other hype cycles ramming up. Well, let me tell you about the PS5 God of War Ragnarok bundle.
Yes.
So you'll be able to pre-order a PS5,
Toyota Prius 5.
A copy of God of War Ragnarok, which is November 9th?
Yeah, November 9th.
November 9th, yeah, which is under a month away.
Yeah, it is.
So Ragnarok has also gone gold as well. We can drop that little nugget. So it has gone gold. And for those of you who don't really know what that means is it's now in a state where it can be like pressed onto a disc and like it is good to go. There will still be a day one update. So the game's not done, but it's in a state where it is like
certified, ready for certification. Yeah.
Yeah, ready for certification. It is finished enough. So the only thing that really needs to happen is a day one update will get pushed because that is just the reality of the world we live in nowadays. And it is good to go. So this time next month, some of us might have even finished Ragnarok, which is far out amazing. So excited.
Yeah, it's basically Games Gone Gold is essentially like this final improvement, main development on the game's been finished essentially. And, you know, you can basically start printing them, putting them on CDs, you know, manufacturing those covers and all that sort of stuff. Obviously less consequential now in the digital age when all these games are just uploaded to the PS Store, but the same thing, you know, it's the same sort of thing. So, yeah, no, it was actually, you know, it comes from the term basically when the master copy of the game was actually sent on a disc that was gold colored. Yeah. So that's where actually going gold comes from. But excited. Yeah. So I think that's pretty much all the main news. There is one more news that that we want to talk about, but I thought, look, we'll mention that with what we've been playing because it is obviously so relevant.
Yeah.
So what we've been playing, I'll probably start because I don't have much.
You can kick us off, Mike.
Yeah, so I've already talked about my my trials and tribulations with Elden Ring. I did play a bit of the Call of Duty beta as well, I will say, a couple of weeks ago. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I know that people are complaining about the time to kill. I think a lot of that will just be ironed out, and they need to figure out what they want to do with all that stuff. Do they want a quick game, slow game? But I thought it was very clean. I love the modern warfare. I love the modern setting, so I'm very excited. The maps seemed fairly good. There was a few, but some of them were good. So that's I like they're going back to three lane. Not, you know, the most verticality is two levels. That's all they need. Now the other game I was playing is Overwatch 2. So that's where I said I wanted to tie in because obviously we've got a lot of stuff about Overwatch 2. You know, obviously they've had a horrible launch with a DDoS attack. They've had countless server issues. They've, you know, they have this mobile authentication where basically people with prepaid phones can't use their phones. So people who can't afford a payment plan are basically locked out of Overwatch, which is horrible, which is terrible. I understand from the other side, you know, because you know, a lot of these hackers, they just buy burner phones or these sort of prepaid numbers. And that's how they get around, you know, putting a new for mobile phone number. That's, you know, if they've been banned on one number, they'll just go out, buy a prepaid phone, use another number. So, you know, it's hard. It's a rock and a hard place. And they've got to be better at figuring out this system. But look, what I will say is I personally haven't experienced much. I haven't experienced any crashes. I think for me, because I joined a bit later, after all that, I let that all settle down. So I was okay. But yeah, and there were reports of Call of Duty doing this, but they've since been quashed. I think they came out saying that they're not doing this or they've turned their back on it. So they don't need to, you know, to worry about that. But look, I know Overwatch 2 is in a bit of a terrible state. Look, I'm not a huge fan of role queue as well. I think it's a bit of a silly idea. That hasn't been executed that well. Obviously, the big elephant in the room, there's not much new content. There's obviously a lot of new heroes, but, you know, all the stuff they promised, the campaign and all these new stuff, they've just been pushed back. So nothing's happening on that front. It's just more or less the same game with some new heroes. And for me, who hasn't played for a long time, it's obviously a bit of overwhelming because it's like you got all these new heroes. And I actually personally think I'm on the side of it's a bit saturated. It's honestly been saturated. There's so many new heroes and I think they're just too much and they just needed to dial it down with the amount of heroes. That's the thing, right? I like the idea of here's more content and the most classic thing to do in a hero-based shooter like that is bring out more heroes, just bring out more characters. But it just gets to the point where you get overwhelmed with choice and you, you know, a lot of people become just a bit, I don't know. I like the idea that some people are similar but different. So you can, if you like McCree, but you don't like, you know, his utility or the way he plays, there's Ashe. You know, that's great for you. Or if you don't, you know, if you don't like Moira, there's, you know, other healers that are of similar, you know, the Kiriko and things like that. So look, I understand, but at the same time, it can be overwhelming and with all these decisions. And people have been complaining about the Games Pass, the Battle Pass, I should say. I've actually heard pretty balanced opinion on it. A lot of people actually saying, look, there is a Battle Pass, but it's actually not that egregious. It's actually very easy to unlock stuff. And part of the reason why I haven't really looked into it, so I can't give my own opinion, but part of the reason why I actually see that I could potentially say that's a valid criticism is because I actually don't think the loot boxes in Overwatch 1 were egregious at all. It was just cosmetics. It was fun. No one ever had a problem with it until EA and Battlefront, that whole saga started. That's when, you know, loot boxes became this big thing.
The Overwatch loot boxes were good because, as you say, it was literally just cosmetic stuff. They had no impact whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's just cosmetic.
And that's why I thought, look, they've obviously locked the heroes behind the battle pass, but they've said that it is easy. And if it is, that's okay. I understand they don't want to overwhelm players with all these new heroes that are coming out, but it can bring a bit of an advantage to those who, you know, I really want this new character. They're so OP. Cause I still think, you know, it's still this shady tactic, but everyone does it. And that shady tactic is when there's new content that comes out in terms of a gun, in terms of a character, they'll make that character initially OP. They'll make it the meta straight away. Makes sense. I understand why. Then they'll dial it back when it's a bit too OP. Then they'll realize, okay, but it's just to get everyone to play it, get everyone hooked on it, get everyone to buy it, try it out, get the battle pass. I want to grind it out because they're so OP. I want this gun because it's so OP. So I understand it's a bit of a shady tactic, but you know, they've got to make money the way they do. So, but you know what? They've brought this controversy on themselves if they do that, because now people are like, well, we're aware of that and we don't want that. So we'll see how it goes. But if you liked Overwatch 1, you're going to like Overwatch 2. And that's pretty much the reason I'm excited for the campaign stuff, because I'm sort of getting myself back into the lore. But I will say I just wanted more of Overwatch 1. And I just saw Overwatch 2 as an excuse to jump back in. That's all I saw it as. And with new heroes, cleaner, better UI, a bit more balanced. You know, if you notice that, the big difference, one of the big differences is that all stunning abilities have basically been removed. So Ana's sleep dart's still there. And obviously, Junkrat's trap. And I'm not talking about ultimates here like Ryan's, but or Zarya's, but I'm just saying their abilities, like McCree's flashbang's gone and things like that. You've also got Roadhog's hook. But look, they're trying to get rid of the annoyances that people had with a lot of stuff. But I don't know. It's we'll see how it goes. I haven't really played it much. I played a couple games. I just guess that I'll have to wait and see till all the boys jump on. We relive that feeling. We start playing competitive and we'll see how it goes. I kind of think at the moment tanks are a bit too overpowered, or, you know, it's they've rather than strengthening other characters, they've weakened other, you know, they've weakened a lot of characters. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But
it's so interesting you talking about this, because when this game came out, we played it a lot. Like, I played it with you a lot, played it with Dan a lot. We played it as a group a lot. A lot of time we were full partying. And I really loved Overwatch. I when it came to my time with Overwatch coming to an end, I was very much like, okay, this is the end. I'm finished now. Have never felt the urge to go back. Like, once I put it down, I never felt the urge to come back. And then the other week when Overwatch 2 actually released, we were messaging and we're like, oh, is Overwatch 2 out? I'm like, yeah, I think it is. It's out today. Yeah, okay. And I looked at it on the store and I was like, am I going to download it? And I was like, no, I don't, it's really sad to think, because how much fun I had with Overwatch 1, that this has been bungled from day one and it has just poisoned the well for me with Overwatch. The campaign is something I do want to play. And when that eventually comes out, if it comes out, I will get that and I will play that. But if this is just Overwatch 1 again, which it seems like it is with some new characters, that's not what I'm after.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I wanted Overwatch 2 to be, but I didn't want it to be Overwatch 1. And that's like, obviously, it's going to be huge. People are still going to play this. Like, I am probably in the minority, because there are people who wanted just more Overwatch. And that's 100%, that's like, happy for them. Absolutely happy for them. Overwatch League will continue to be a raging success. And that'll be great. That'll be fine. That's not what I wanted. If I like for Overwatch 2, I wanted probably to get rid of some characters instead of just adding on. Do what fighting games do. Like, don't do just, I know that like live service is the thing, but like you can have a new live service game and get rid of characters that people don't play instead of just changing them and building up and then having this bloat, which bloat isn't always bad. Look at League of Legends and Dota 2. Look how many characters and heroes there are there. It's insane. Yeah. Not all of them get used though. Yeah, so that would have been what I wanted from an Overwatch 2. And like I'm not really that upset about missing out on it either, because I don't know, just it just doesn't speak to me, which is sad because I really did enjoy Overwatch vanilla, original, OG. Just other stuff I'd rather be playing than that now.
Mm. Yeah, no, that is a very, very, very fair criticism and very fair point. I completely see where you're coming from. So yeah, well, I think they did bungle it up, and I think you know, it kind of reminds me of Destiny 1 and Destiny 2. And obviously Destiny 2 was a big push from Activision to Bungie. You know, we know that that wasn't a Bungie decision. That was a Activision decision, the publisher. And now, you know, we know that, you know, Bungie are so happy to walk away with Destiny, which is insane. I still think that's insane why Activision let that go. What was behind closed doors? But anyway, you know, was Destiny 2 that necessary? You know, people still say, was it necessary when Destiny 1 was there? They could have just, you know, because Destiny 2 is still going very strong, right? But all the stuff they've done, they could have just been put in Destiny 1 and kept going. So that's the same here. This could easily just be Overwatch 1.5, like a 1.3. You know what I mean? Like this, because what they did was they had a content drought for so long, lost so many players, and then all of it for Overwatch 2. And it's like, could you just imagine if all this naturally came and you kept supporting it, you know? And that campaign should have come earlier, honestly, because that probably would have still kept me. Because maybe I dropped off, 2018 or something, 2017, 2018. And it's sort of like, you know, if they had a campaign around then when things were getting a bit stale, new maps, new characters, then it would have been okay. Like, I get it. Part of the reasons when like Wrecking Ball and all these new, like I was happy with Doomfist, I was happy with Sombra, and then like characters kept coming. I'm like, I can't keep up with it. I can't just keep up playing with all of them. Yeah. So, but it was funny because when I mentioned playing Overwatch, I actually thought of you, Jordan. I'm like, you know what? I should play more like your style and just pick one or two characters and just specialize and play with them and enjoy them rather than, because what I used to do is just be a bit of a jack of all trades. I used to be, you know, if you look at my play hours, I've got 20, 30 hours with so many different characters. And it's like, you know, McCree, Soldier, Symmetra, you know, Zarya, like all these different characters, McCree, obviously, Genji, you know, and it's sort of like,
you mean Cassidy?
Sorry, Cassidy, Cole Cassidy. And it's so weird because I think one of his lines is still McCree in the game. So it's like, they still haven't got it out. But anyway. And
even you saying that, I have fond memories of that. I have fond memories of like playing as Roadhog and Soldier 76. I think that was my main crew. I have such fond memories of that. But I'm also like, the memories that I don't feel like I need to go enjoy again.
The only way I can see the glory days come back is if the glory days do. And if it's like, we all jump on, and because now it's 5v5, it's not 6v6. So it's a bit, I don't know. I don't mind it. It's less grindy to get everyone off the point. Yeah, one less tank, essentially. Yeah. So, I don't mind it. And I like to see this because, I don't know. I just haven't experienced it yet. So if it's like that, you know, hey, the glory days are back. We're all jumping on, playing compared. It's good. We're grinding to diamond, whatever. That's a lot of fun. But, you know, time will tell.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I've been playing, Jules. What about yourself?
I've been playing a bit. So yeah, it has been a while since we've chatted about what we've been playing. I make it sound like I've been playing a bit, but it's like four games I've played. But I've played them I play them a lot. So let me just go. I might even grab up my PlayStation here. I'm sitting in front of my PlayStation, so I'll quickly pop it on. I can tell you about the first game that I played, and it's one that you chatted about just before, and that was the MW2 beta. So yes. It's been a bit now since that finished, but we can quickly chat about our impressions anyway. Well, you gave yours. I'll quickly chat about mine. This is probably the most I've enjoyed a beta ever for a Call of Duty game. I thoroughly enjoyed my time to the point where I was like thinking about it when like I was coming home from work. I was like,
I love that.
Well, I think
that's when it's got its hooks in you. That's so good. Like, that's in the old days.
Ends tomorrow. I think I can get on tonight and play for a bit. Then I was like, oh, should I just go to school tired tomorrow? Should I go to work tired? Like, it doesn't matter. I'm tired. So played the MW2 beta, Really, really enjoyed it. The maps are still not what I want from maps. When MW3 came around, it's when they started tinkering with maps and just started throwing stuff in, and there's no real flow to the maps anymore. It's now more like it's not like a map that's been designed to be a map. It's like, here's a real location and what a real location will look like. And it's like, that's not what we want. We want a map that is that has good flow to it, that doesn't have too many objects in it, doesn't have too many places to hide. Like, it's just it's a map designed to be a multiplayer shooter map. And Black Ops was probably the last time, in my opinion, that happened. And then from MW3, that was when they started doing these weird, instead of doing like a rectangle or a square map, these weird shaped maps that might still have a three-lane design idea behind it, but are not the same as MW2 maps and the Black Ops 1 maps, and then all the maps before it. So the maps still aren't what I want, but we're not getting those maps anymore. Like, that design ideology is gone for whatever reason. It seems like it's to make the maps a little bit more fairer, to get rid of all the spawn trapping and stuff, which I get, totally get that. That's fine. That's whatever. And you can see it when you play Domination. Because when you used to play Domination, it was like, there's one flag in your spawn, there's one flag in the other spawn, there's one right in the middle. And they'd almost form a line in the map. Now, it's like you don't spawn at a flag anymore. You still do, but you've got to go a bigger distance to get it, and it's not unrealistic that the other team would get to that flag either. Anyways, I'm in the weeds about that. Still really enjoyed it. Thought the gunsmith stuff was really confusing. So instead of now you leveling up a gun, you weapon up a gun family. And so once you unlock the attachments for that gun, for one gun, sorry, in that family, you unlock it for the rest of that family. But then to unlock some of those guns in that family, you need to get to a certain level in that family first. And it's a little bit confusing, and it didn't quite make enough sense. And that is something that they're tuning, that they've said in the post-beta notes, that they will be fixed for launch.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It's obviously, if you think about the way it works before, obviously, you know, you have a couple of assault rifles that all of them use the same foregrip, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, the desert foregrip. I don't know what I'm saying.
The foregrip. Just use the same foregrip. Yeah.
The foregrip. So if you unlock the foregrip for one gun and it uses the exact same foregrip for the other gun, I think that's what the groups mean, right? That foregrip's available for all the guns that use that foregrip, because it kind of didn't make sense. And I don't know. I agree with what you're saying. It's good because I hated the fact that, like, every time I would unlock a new, you know, this new weapon came into Call of Duty, it's instantly the meta. Cause like I said before, that's their tactic. They'll make the new gun the meta, and you have to like grind it out. And then by the time all the streamers would have it, all the, you know, they would all have it unlocked and all ready to go, cause they play hours. But by the time I've grinded it, it's no longer meta. And I'm like, because all those attachments I have to re-grind, I have to re-get them up. So I kind of like that, okay, when this new gun happens, if it happens to be in the assault rifle class, it's like, oh, okay, I've already unlocked these attachments through just naturally playing the game with other guns. It's good to know that a lot of these are already available and there might be some little grinding involved. But yeah, going on to what you're saying.
Yeah, so I'm really enjoying it. It has only just hit me that we're only 13 or 12 days away from when MW2 comes out, which is really exciting. I'm actually excited. Those of you who have listened for a while know I haven't actually bought the last two Call of Duties, and this is someone who has bought every Call of Duty since Black Ops.
That is big.
I didn't buy the last two because I did buy Cold War. I did not play it, so I bought it, and then for the PS5 or PS4, and then I sold it and I didn't even play it.
I looked at it for
ages and I didn't sell it, and I didn't play Vanguard either. I
just had a campaign of Cold War.
Yeah. No, I'd say I just wasn't interested. Just didn't interest me. Yeah,
fair enough. It's a good campaign.
I've famously played Warzone for an ungodly amount of time, like almost 20 days, I think I played Warzone.
I love it.
Which might actually be the most amount of time I've put into a Call of Duty. Black Ops 1 might be the only exception there. So really enjoyed the MW2 beta. Really looking forward to MW2 when it comes out. The other thing I played is The Last of Us Part 1 remake. I'll quickly chat about that. Loved it. Loved every single minute of it, being back in that world. It is super close to being my favorite game of all time, but God of War 2018 still takes that cake.
Ooh.
Last of Us Part 1 and Part 2, though, would be in my top four. Like,
do you know what?
Like, I love both of them so much.
This might be a controversial opinion, but I actually don't mind the fact that Naughty Dog did a Last of Us Part 1 remake. Or they took over the project at the end, but I don't mind that was greenlit. Oh, there was a bit of... I know we didn't talk about this, but I've probably missed it. But Horizon?
They're the remake, yeah.
Zero Dawn is reportedly getting a remake. And I will say, I actually don't mind the fact that Naughty Dog did this, because I'm like, you know what? And even Horizon's like... The businesses, they can do what they want. We're just customers. We're consumers to them. We're the one. They're trying to get our money, so it's like, I don't care. You can do whatever the hell you want. There's no, you don't owe anything to us. That being said, I think I'm not gonna buy Horizon Zero Dawn remake.
And that's the thing. Just don't.
Yeah, just don't buy it. Because for me, I'm like, that's silly, ridiculous. Like, not ridiculous in they shouldn't have done it. It's more like, why would I want to play that? I literally played Horizon Zero Dawn 5 years ago. I don't need slightly more freckles on Aloy's face and maybe some slight tweaks to gameplay to really like appreciate, you know, I can't wait to jump back in. And like, it's completely not for me. And I think a lot of people resonate with that. It's completely not for anyone. So I don't see the use in that. Like, if I was the director at the company or the decision maker, I'd be like, no, this is silly. Why are we doing this? I do like the idea of Last of Us Part 1 because it has been 10 years. Obviously, it's been two console generations. The other thing is they're trying to standardize both for the PS5. I can see why, especially with the TV show coming out. When TV shows come out, numbers go up for these games. Yeah. Witcher, Cyberpunk, Edge Runners recently as well. Like, these things will go up. And the fact that, okay, I can get a PS5 and or PS4, whatever, and I can get Last of Us Part 1. And part they did part one so that casuals would know that there's just a part one and a part two. There's like, you know, people might get confused. There's part two is like, well, there's Last of Us. Is that part one? Or like, it just standardizes things.
Yeah. Because to standardize that branding that it is a part one, because it was always on your shelf, just say Last of Us Part Two. But just standardize that branding to say it is part one. So love the game. Don't care about the price point whatsoever, because I think it's worth every cent.
Yeah. And that's where, you know what?
A return player or a new player is worth every single cent.
Yeah. And that's where people can argue. And that's fair enough. Like, if you don't want to spend $70, then that's on you. I didn't want to spend $70. And plus, I don't have time. But if I did have time, I would actually wait for $40 or something like that. And I'm okay with that. And that's okay. Each to their own, you know, it's up to them. And we speak with our wallets. That's the only way we can speak. Our words mean nothing if we are buying the game. If we say we don't want this, this is ridiculous, and we buy it, words mean nothing. So anyway.
Yeah. So played that, loved it. I also played Left Behind for the first time.
How good is it?
I was fantastic. And seeing bits of the show and seeing the Left Behind elements in it, from that trailer, I'm like, yep, fantastic. So Last of Us Part 1, amazing. Loved it. Loved every second of it. Can't wait to play them all again one day. I think before Last of Us Part 3 comes out, which it inevitably will sometime in the future, I can't wait to do like a playthrough of all of them again. What I would love is when they do a like director's cut for number 2 and inevitably bundle it with Part 1. I'd love it if you could do like a chronological playthrough where it doesn't stop. Like, there's no break in between 1 and 2 and Left Behind. Like, they slot all these things in chronologically and then you just play all the way to the end.
Oh, that's sick. That would be insane. That would be really cool, man.
Yeah. So the other thing I played, two other things I played in the time being was A Plague Tale Innocence, which is something Dan had been saying that we should play for a long time. And I finally got around to it. So it took me 14 hours and I did platinum it, which I was pretty excited about. This game is really good. It was really, really good. Makes me super excited for A Plague Tale Requiem, which comes out like three or four days from now. I don't want to say too much about what the story is without giving spoilers away, because I was actually really intrigued with the story. But you play as Amisha and Hugo, so they are siblings, and they're sort of like estranged siblings, because Hugo has a bit of a sickness that has meant that he's sort of kept away from Amisha as they've been growing up on this estate with their mum and dad. So they come from like a rich family, and then something happens at the very start where Amisha and Hugo now need to essentially run away from these people that are chasing them. And whether it has something to do with Hugo's sickness, you need to find out for yourself and what that sickness actually is, and is it a sickness? And you are basically going through this war-torn, plague-driven, or plague-ridden, like I think it's supposed to be France or a place that's inspired by France. Thing like countrysides and that sort of thing, and you've got to escape these plagues of rats, which will tie in. It's like that's which is a part of the story as well. It was really interesting narrative, really nice stealth sections in there. I really liked the characters, really fell in love with some of the characters and really liked how they all sort of gelled together. I know I'm late to the party on this. This game came out a few years ago now, so I am quite late to the party on it, but I really enjoyed it. And I will be getting a Plague Tale Requiem on day one, I believe, because I'm just really excited for it. And I do recommend it for those who are in the mood for a bit of a narrative-driven stealth experience. The other game I've been playing, this is a weird one, and you'd be forgiven if you haven't heard of this game. So the game's called Akane, and it's A-K-A-N-E. And this is one of my favorite types of games. And again, if you're a long-time listener, you'll know I love these games. It is the mindless jump in, just do a little bit for half an hour, and then you walk away, and that's it. So it's a lot like Hotline Miami, but it's like a wave-based horde mode where you play as like this cyber samurai named Akane, and it is a top-down view, and you're in this one little area that never changes. The location and the things in the location never change, but you like these hordes of enemies come at you and they one hit kill you, you one hit kill them. And the idea is to last as long as you can. There is like a story and a reason for why you are there, but that isn't really that important. And basically you play through and you kill 100 enemies, you verse a boss, kill another 100 enemies, you do it versus the same boss, but he has a new move. I think there is a way to actually beat the game and end it, but I'm not entirely sure. It might just be endless, but it is so much fun. And the idea is you want to, yeah, there's these challenges that will set you. So like some of the challenges are, as I'm looking at my trophies now, some of them will be kill a tank with a 50 hit combo and a special move. And so you'll have to like get yourself a 50 hit combo, which is a meter that's always going down. So get yourself a 50 hit combo and then get the tank to a stage where you can kill him with a special move, and then you'll get that challenge and you'll unlock a new weapon or a new glove that'll do extra damage or give you extra ammo for your gun that you can use as well. So it's really fun. It's really cheap. I think it was like $7 or something on the store. So it's really, really cheap. And I've put 9 hours into it so far, and I'm really enjoying it. So it's my nice little, I've got an hour to play and I don't really want to invest like emotionally or mentally in a story. I just want to like kill some stuff. So I jump in, play this, really liking it. Heading towards the platinum, 14 trophies away, but it's challenging. It's super challenging, but I'm loving it so much. And that's nice. What I've been playing.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, nice variety of games. And
nice variety, yeah.
What are you going to be playing this week?
So I just was downloading some stuff before because I was looking through. I've downloaded 3 games. And now that I've just remembered that A Plague Tale Requiem comes out, I don't know whether I'll actually play any of them, but we'll see. So I downloaded Salt and Sanctuary, which is like a 2D Dark Souls type deal. I might just keep that on there and see how we go. Probably won't get to it. I downloaded one called Spiritfarer, which is a cozy management game about you managing people in the afterlife. So it's supposed to be like a management sim. So that was on PS Plus Extra. So I just downloaded that one. And then I also just downloaded for a replay. Boy.
Nice.
Boy of War. God of War I've downloaded. I don't know whether I'll actually finish it before Ragnarok, but I'm going to try. I'm going to give it the old college try, I think.
I just watched the cutscenes. I haven't finished it, but yeah. There's like this 5-hour edit with all the need to know, including the Mimir conversations and a bit of gameplay and all the cutscenes. So I'm like, you know what? I probably won't be able to spend time playing it, so I'll do that. And
awesome.
Yeah, it's a good compromise, I think. Yeah. So not I'm bad. So excited. Yeah, I'm pumped too. Very pumped. Very pumped, George. It'll be a good end of the year that we have with a lot of games coming out, and we've got a lot of fun stuff coming out with the Game of the Year conversations and, you know, best of, top 20s, all that sort of stuff. So keep you an eye out for those. Yeah. But Jordan,
especially because like a game of the year at the moment probably seems pretty clear cut. But there's probably three contenders coming out.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, I like COD and God of War, and yeah, there's still
Callisto. I reckon Callisto, that could be in the running for God of for Dead game Space. Of the year.
Well, would you? Yeah, remake.
Dead Space is January.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, January. So yeah, all right. I guess we will leave it there for this week, guys. Thank you so much for listening and continuing to follow us and listen to us, I'll say. And if there is not anything else, guys, we hope you all have a great day and we will see you
later.
Later.